Good morning.
Morning.
Can you hear me okay on that?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. My name's Zach, and as Dan told you that part, it's really good to be with you all this morning. I want to start with the story of Dorothy Oben. Dorothy Oben was a German-born immigrant who arrived in Seattle in 1887. The city was just 30 years old at that time, and it lacked significant money for public infrastructure. Miss Oben, at 20 years old, opened a high-class brothel in Seattle. It was at the corner of what is today 3rd in Washington. It would have posted prices on the window. It was as nice as any hotel, staffed by girls that she educated in arts. No, it's very troubling. Arts, politics, economics, world affairs. They served the best drinks in town and provided the best conversation with lively entertainment. And they offered any number of pleasures in the parlor upstairs. Miss Oben was incredibly successful. She adopted the name Madame Lou Graham and became the center of Seattle's social scene. When the Seattle fire hit in 1889, Madame Lou proposed a flat rate sin tax that gave the city money to rebuild. And she herself had significant wealth. There was a famous case where a woman in Seattle killed her abuser and was brought up on charges of murder. Madame Lou gave her $1,000 to cover her bail and legal fees, which is the equivalent of $35,000 today. Her donation to the public education system in Seattle was the largest of any single donor prior to Bill Gates. In addition to the brothel, she ran somewhat of an orphanage, taking in and raising many children who lost parents in the Klondike Gold Rush in Alaska. She employed Asian and Indigenous women at the time that it was illegal to do so. A new scholarship reveals that she may have also housed and protected trans women. Seattle historian Bill Seidel says that Lou Graham was the sex worker who built Seattle. And so as we continue this series on women in the Hebrew Bible, I think of Madame Lou in conversation with this tale we just heard about Madame Rahab. Both women were well-connected, brilliant, and entrepreneurial leaders. Both women were heroes of their own time. And both women were largely erased from their own stories because they were sex workers. What do we do with that? The story about Rahab comes in the middle of the story about the conquest of Jericho. We heard chapter 2 and chapter 6 of that epic saga, but you may remember the story of Jericho from Sunday school. Perhaps a song or two comes to mind about the walls tumbling down. In the story, Joshua is Moses' successor leading the Israelites through the wilderness. They cross the Jordan and discover that the promised land has this giant fortress in the middle of it, the walled city of Jericho. And God instructs Joshua to be strong and courageous. That's the refrain over and over again in Joshua, be strong and courageous. And God gives them the instruction to parade around the walls, and they do so for 7 days and 7 nights. And at the end of the seventh day, they blow their trumpets and the walls come down. And that's basically what everyone knows about this story. That's how Jericho exists in the collective imagination of most Bible readers. And that is a beautiful telling. It highlights that even in the most hopeless of situations, we can be strong and courageous knowing that God is with us. And that's great. I love that. That preaches all day long. And if your Sunday school was like mine, it's really cute when a little tomato sings about it. But this story is also challenging because it seems to be a story about God asking God's people to wage holy war. And in a post-atom bomb world, a post-Vietnam world, a post-9/11 world, in the middle of wars with Ukraine and Gaza, we know there is no such thing as holy war. Maybe Mennonites know that better than most. And we also are wise to learn from our Indigenous siblings who teach us of the evils of colonization and all of its traumas. The trauma of being conquered, the trauma of being invaded, the trauma of violence, and the trauma of fighting to survive. So what do we do with this story? Well, I think Rahab has something to say about that. And I think she has a lot to say about God. So let's look at the story again, because there are three things that jump out to me. First, these are the world's worst spies. They suck at it. Joshua sends them across the Jordan River into the promised land to scout it out. And the very first thing they do is go to a brothel. They go to have a good time with Madame Rahab. And they get caught. Within 24 hours of their arrival, the king knows that they're there. He knows who they are. They're Israelites. And he knows where they are. He goes directly to Madame Rahab. Maybe they tripped a wire or broke a vase on the way in. but they are reckless and really bad at their job. Which is funny to me because this story is part of the history of God's people, and it doesn't remember its own people very kindly. At the same time, it does remember them honestly. Like they were the kind of crummy spies who got caught in a brothel. And this is not the way history normally gets told. I mean, think about the US. We're in an age of reckoning with our own country's history. We've learned a lot in recent years that our founders were perhaps not the pure people we once thought they were. Our government may not be as innocent as we once believed. Our systems may be plagued with biases and prejudices we didn't see. We aren't as honest as the Bible is when we tell our history. And perhaps this is true in your own story. When I do spiritual care at Harborview, there are some secrets that come out. There are ways that we are not honest about ourselves and our stories. Perhaps our stories include regrets or mistakes, maybe not visits to brothels, but maybe there are things in our stories that involve sex or money or addictions or fears or shame. One of the amazing things over and over again in these Hebrew stories is their honesty. They remember their history not at its best, but at its most base and buffoony, with all of its mishaps and harms. And that's something I get from these clumsy spies. We must be honest in the stories we tell. Those stories we tell about ourselves and those stories we tell to ourselves. Because God is in our stories, not as we wish them to be, but as they really are. But enough with the terrible spies. Let's get on with Rahab. Within less than a day, the spies are in the city and they get caught. The king sends guards to Rahab's place. Now, Rahab's a professional. I mean, she can't have guards arresting her clients. If every tourist who comes to her shop gets hauled off by the king, business is going to dry up quickly. So she takes the men and she hides them on the roof. And the guards show up, knocking on the door, and say, "Rahab, we know the Israelite men came to you. Where are they?" And Rahab leans on the door and smokes a cigarette. I don't know why, but in my brain, she has to have a cigarette. Just makes it better. And she goes, "Of course the men came to me." That's what the Hebrew literally says. "Of course the men came to me." Like, I like her confidence. "Of course the men came to me, but I didn't realize they were Israelites." And I do think Rahab has an epiphany in that moment. She realizes they're Israelites. And I don't think she knew that until now. And she says, "Well, they've already left. They went that way. And if you hurry, you might catch them." And off the guards go. And Rahab goes back to the roof and gives one of the longest speeches in the book of Joshua. This sex worker, this marginalized person, this human who has known so much violence, this woman in a man's world gives one of the longest speeches. And she tells the men what she's heard. She's heard about their God. And she heard about their God who delivered their ancestor from slavery in Egypt. She heard about how their God parted the Red Sea so they might escape from Pharaoh. She heard about how their God protected their ancestors for 40 years. And she heard about how their God has been with them in every battle through the wilderness, and they've been victorious every time. And she reveals something. All of Jericho has heard about these wandering people, and they've been warned. They know they're coming. But for Rahab, there is no doubt in her mind that this God who has promised this land to these Israelites is going to deliver it to them. Rahab's a prophet, and that's what makes this story so crazy. In this story, the mouthpiece of God is a sex worker in enemy territory. I mean, think about this from a storytelling perspective. If you were going to make a film called The Conquest of Canaan, it's an interesting choice to make one of the main characters a sex worker in Canaan. I think Rahab's hard for many of us to deal with because our society doesn't really know what to do with sex workers. I mean, think about Madame Lou in Seattle. Sex workers often get edited out of our societal narratives. Sometimes we romanticize them as libertine and free. At best, we ignore them. At worst, we pass legislation to persecute them. We just don't know how to talk about it as a culture, and we tend to take a not in my backyard kind of approach. I'm sure there are other people whose stories we ignore and marginalize. But she can't get much more marginalized than Rahab. She is vulnerable and judged not only among her own people, but across time and generations. And she's a political enemy who should be a villain. And yet she's the hero of the story. She's the one that speaks the truth. But perhaps that's the point. In the middle of this story of the violent conquest of Canaan, a Canaanite sex worker speaks the truth. She's already a conquered person, her body has been invaded. She knows violence. She knows the fight to survive. Her perspective has something to offer this really violent story. And it reveals something about the glory of God. She's seen it, and she knows that God keeps God's promises. Can you think of anyone else we might double marginalize like this? Is there anyone in our society that we disempower? Is there anyone that we think of as our enemy? Could it be that they have some truth to offer us? Could they be the mouthpiece of God in our day and age? I'll be honest, when I think of my enemies, I tend to think of people who vote differently than me. And if I'm honest, I would be very quick to judge a sex worker affiliated with a political party that I didn't support. I actually have. Is that true for you? As we consider race, class, denomination, sexual orientation, gender identity, political affiliation, or any of the other lines that we use to marginalize and villainize, could it be that the voice of God is speaking through those we least expect it? How can we look beyond our biases to hear what God is saying to us in this age, at this moment? Well, to finish the story, Rahab believes that God will be victorious. And like a good businesswoman, she wants in on it. She makes a deal. She's already protected the spies from the king, so she goes a step further to help them escape. And in exchange, when the Israelites conquer Canaan, she wants them to spare her and her family. Deal, the spies say. Their exact phrase in Hebrew is, "Our life for yours." And they instruct her to tie this red cord on her house so that it's not destroyed. So Rahab helps them escape. She takes them to her house, which apparently is built into the wall of Jericho. And she's strong. It says she lowers these two by herself out a window. And they return to Joshua. And the text says they tell him everything that Rahab told them. So think about this. Joshua sent these two spies to find out everything they could about the promised land so that they could make a plan. And instead, they return and they're like, okay, there are these giant walls. And when we got inside, we went to a prostitute's house. Turns out she helped us escape. And then she told us that there's no way we can't win because God keeps God's promises. And even though she's a Canaanite, we told her we wouldn't kill her or her family. If I was Joshua, I want to punch these guys in the throat. Like, what? But it works. For the next several chapters, we get these stories of the Israelites crossing into the promised land. And as we know, the famous part of the story goes, they walk around the walls 7 days, 7 nights, blow their trumpets, and the walls crumble. God delivers the city of Jericho to the Israelites after 40 generations, or after 40 years and many generations, they're finally home. And even though the walls come tumbling down, Rahab's house is spared. Not only does God keep God's promise to the Israelites, God keeps the promise made to Rahab. Rahab, her home, and her family are spared. And they join the Israelites. The text practically says they lived happily ever after. So what does it all mean? I mean, when I first read the text to prepare for the sermon, I was like, this is such a fun story. It's kind of a Cinderella story, like a story about a sex worker who in a cunning moment makes a deal to save herself and her family. But then I asked myself what the story reveals about God. And that is more challenging to me. Because the good news in Rahab's story is God keeps God's promises. The Israelites are given the promised land. Rahab's house is spared. Rahab gets to live. And just as Rahab said, God keeps God's promises. But in my own moments of anxiety, in my own moments of fear, in so many moments that I encounter on a daily basis, if someone stood in front of me and said, God keeps God's promises, like an incompetent spy, I would want to punch that person in the throat. I mean, in an election year, in a crazy time of inflation, in a housing crisis, with wars in Gaza and Ukraine, with anti-LGBTQ legislation in the news, and the grief of a global pandemic, it's hard to hear God keeps God's promises. But that's the truth that Rahab offers us to wrestle with. God keeps God's promises. And we see this also in the story of Jesus. Jesus promises that God's love is always with us. And Jesus proves it's true, because in dying on the cross, Jesus becomes like Rahab. Jesus becomes a conquered person. His body is invaded. He knows violence. He knows the fight to survive. And he knows death. And that's the thing. I want God to keep God's promises without the violence and without the death. But that's not how these stories go. The story is a reminder that even when life is violent, even when our stories are full of death, none of that changes God's promises. God keeps God's promises. Violence is way too common in our world. being a conquered person is way too common in this world. Some of us are conquered by violence. Some of us are conquered by systems of oppression. And some of us are conquered by our own stories and families and traumas and bodies and mental health. I mean, you, what has conquered you? Because being a conquered person, being invaded, fighting to survive, none of that disqualifies you from the love of God. In fact, God is closest to those who are fighting to survive. Marginalized, villainized, conquered people are often the ones God is the closest to. That's God's promise, and God keeps God's promise. So whatever conquers you, God promises to be with you. So those are my three takeaways from the story. One, these spies suck, but they might remind us to be honest about our own stories. Two, the mouthpiece of God is a sex worker in enemy territory. And perhaps we will encounter the voice of God when we are open to hearing it from the people we least expect. And three, Rahab reminds us that God keeps God's promises. The violence in the story is really confusing to me. The holy war against Canaan is a problem that theologians are really just starting to grapple with. Why does God command this extermination of the Canaanite people? We don't really know. But Rahab offers a unique perspective in what happens, and God keeps God's promise to her. And interestingly, this is not the end of Rahab's story. If we jump ahead in the Bible, Rahab marries a man named Solomon, and they have a son named Boaz, and Boaz marries a woman named Ruth, and they have a son named David, who defeats Goliath and becomes king. And his bloodline eventually gives us Joseph, the father of Jesus. Rahab's family is the family that Jesus is born into. She couldn't have died. So what was the story all about? What was supposed to happen? What was God trying to do with this conquest of Canaan? Did a few incompetent spies set a whole thing in motion? Did Rahab change everything? Did God have a plan? It's really confusing to me. It's really violent. And so is life. And in the mess of it all, we hear a truth from Grandma Rahab. God keeps God's promises. Amen.
Amen.
Amen.